Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, January 23rd, 2017. Authorities in Kejikeji say rebels attacked a village in the area.
The information that came to me from the head chief that there were five casualties and they were assumed to be civilians all. This morning, I got another information that there were six casualties instead of five.
And health workers in Imatong State are working to reduce South Sudan's high mortality rate.
We have the shortage of the skilled birth attendants, especially the midwives. The few midwives which we have, they are employed by IPs. When their contract comes to an end, they leave us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Residents and local leaders in Kejikeji say at least six people were killed in the area of Yei River State when an unidentified armed group clashed with government forces yesterday. Officials say hundreds of people have been fleeing to neighboring Uganda since the deadly attack. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Yei River State Information Minister Stephen Lodu Onesimo says fighting broke out when members of an armed group loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar ambushed a vehicle carrying 13 passengers from Kejikeji to Juba yesterday.
A passenger vehicle traveling from Kejikeji to Juba. So when we reached a place called Mundikolo, the vehicle was stopped by rebels. There, a passenger was picked from the vehicle. And that passenger was asked by name. Then he was kidnapped from the vehicle. Then they let the vehicle to go.
Onesimo says the other passengers contacted government forces in Kejikeji who caught up with an armed man and a gun battle ensued. At the end, five civilians were killed. Kejikeji County Commissioner Luka Yompek David says a member of the armed group also was killed.
The information that came to me from the head chief that there were five casualties and they were assumed to be civilians all. This morning, I got another information that there were six casualties instead of five. And among the six, one has been identified as one of the rebel officers.
Commissioner David says, although the situation is now calm, hundreds of frightened residents continue to flee to neighboring Uganda looking for safe haven.
Our people have been going to Uganda, or at least, if not the whole family going, part of the family may be taken there, and then part of the family to remain around.
Commissioner David is urging residents to stay calm and has called on rebels in the area to participate in the national dialogue announced by President Kiir recently.
Let us accept this national dialogue for the sake of the innocent people, because they are the victims of the situation.
South Sudan in Focus reached out repeatedly to the SPLA-IO faction allied to Machar for comment, but the calls went unanswered. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Imatong state officials have hired experts to figure out why infant and maternal mortality rates remain extremely high in the area. The government of Canada has provided $1 million Canadian dollars to fund a study that will reduce infant mortality rate in the state. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Torit.
With 2,054 maternal deaths per 100,000 live births in 2014, the last year's surge figures were available. South Sudan has the highest maternal mortality rate in the world, according to International Medical Corps, a group that helps countries around the world reduce high maternal and infant mortality rates. Mothers stand a 1 in 7 chance of dying during childbirth during her lifetime. The Mother-Child Health Lacho South Sudan Research Project is investigating the causes of South Sudan's high maternal mortality rate and will recommend ways to reduce it. Elijo Omoro, the project's principal investigator, says the project will be divided into two phases.
There is the first phase, which is formative, and then there is the second phase, which will be the implementation of the interventions. which will be recommended. Now, what we're doing is actually the formative stage, whereby we're trying to collect some basic information, which will be a baseline. We've got to know this first, so that we are able to design actually the interventions.
Omoro says the finding will guide aid agencies and non-governmental organizations in deciding where and how to intervene to lower both infant and maternal mortality rates in South Sudan.
This information is collected together, put into a database. They will be analyzed. And then out of this, actually, will come an idea of how to design, actually, interventions, which will actually improve maternal child health.
Clementina Lubaya is the acting director general, Imotong State's Health Ministry. Lubaya says much more must be done to lower South Sudan's maternal and infant mortality rates.
Maternal mortality rate in Southern Sudan is very high, 2,054 per 100,000 live birth, and then 84, 1,000 for live. Infant mortality rate is 84 for 1,000 live birth. Our major challenges currently is the human resource. We have the shortage of the skilled birth attendants, especially the midwives. The few midwives which we have, they are employed by IPs. When their contract comes to an end, they leave us, and the health facility remain without midwives to carry on with the work of maternal and child health.
Lubaya says conditions at health facilities for expectant mothers must be improved so new mothers can deliver healthy babies with the help of trained birth attendants, especially in rural areas.
The space are not enough for reproductive health activities. You find only one single room is being used for antenatal care, delivery, postnatal, and then EPI, which is not right. And then the drugs for the mothers, they are not there sometimes. Lack of equipment. Insecurity is also one of the problems. That is why we are not going out.
Dr. Margaret Ito is Imotong State's acting health minister. Ito says the study's findings will help guide future government decisions on funding health services.
We started something, the mobile health, in two counties before, in 2015. But with this project also, we want to see how we can improve our health system by promoting the information system through the networks we have. We want also to have evidence-based intervention. That's why the research is going on.
Officials say the Canadian-funded infant and maternal mortality study in South Sudan and neighboring Uganda will continue for the next 5 years. For VOA News, I'm Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turit.
Elders from Wau State say President Salva Kiir should free their people who they say are in political detention, including former governor of Wau State, Elias Waya Nyipoch, and his deputy. The two leaders were detained in June last year after being accused of failing to stop the violence that broke out in Wau Town. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
Wau County politician Taban John Gu says he welcomes the call by President Salva Kiir for national dialogue, which was announced late last year. But speaking in Arabic, Gu says in order for the dialogue to achieve lasting peace, President Kiir should release all political detainees, including former Wau State Governor Elias Waya Nyipoch and his deputy Andrea Dominic Safir, who have been held for more than 6 months.
We people of Wau are ready for the national dialogue, and we are now on the implementation path. But we are requesting our state and national governments to free those who are in prison in Wau. If people of Wau have influence on the national dialogue, we ask the government to make an effort to free those in detentions.
Gu says he believes if President Kiir pardons the people of Wau who have been detained, there will be a smooth national dialogue that will end hatred and restore lasting peace across the country. Neither former Governor Nyipoch or his deputy Dominic have been charged in the court of law. Wau State Governor Andrea Mayara Cho praised President Kiir for initiating the dialogue, saying it is the only solution to South Sudan's violent conflict. Speaking in Arabic, Achao says he believes Mr. Kiir will grant the community's request to release their detained leaders.
As the state government, we are going to raise this concern to the national government that our sons can be freed from their detentions, whether in Juba or Wau. I know some were detained politically and others were for security matters. I don't think it will take long again for a simple reason. Our president has opened up a door for dialogue and for reconciliation. So if there are people who might have committed any political crime, they should be freed soon.
Governor Achao asked the people of Wau to remain optimistic and work for lasting peace and reconciliation. Presidential spokesman Ateny Wek Ateny says President Kiir has yet to receive an official petition from the Wau community regarding the detention of the former governor and his deputy. He admits some of the former leaders from Wau State were detained for a political and security matters, adding that it is only President Kiir who can pardon them.
It is a prerogative of the president to see whether he will give them the amnesty or pardon them, you know, to and then join the national dialogue or not. So should the president wish to pardon them, he would be justified constitutionally to do so. But it cannot come as a political demand of any group.
Ateny says South Sudanese should learn to look at the bigger picture and focus on the outcome of the national dialogue. He says the demand by Wau community leaders for politicians from their area to be released should not stop the process of the national dialogue.
And in any community there are pro and against, it is likely that to see some people saying no to dialogue and some people will say yes to dialogue. And therefore, majority of people will accept the national dialogue because this is the only way to tackle the political and social problem in the country. I'm not pessimistic and I'm not thinking of any repercussions if a group of people or group of individuals opt out of the national dialogue.
More than 10 of the community members from Wau County, including chiefs and members of the parliament, were sentenced to 2, 5, and 10 years imprisonment by the Court of Law in 2012 after being found guilty. Among the detainees is the Radio Miraya journalist George Livio Bahara, who has been detained since August 2014, allegedly communicating with the rebels. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a closer look at Gambia after former President Yahya Jammeh left the country on Saturday. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how has your culture shaped who you are?
My culture, it shaped just who I am right now because it's given me something I value and I know what to do and what I can't do, what is just respectable and what is not respectable.
Basically, what culture has shaped me in my life is it has taught me different core values, how to respect elders, how to respect people around me, and it has taught me how to live with others in the community.
My culture have shaped me to be polite and to be honest.
My culture, it has shaped me in different ways, particularly in things regarding time management, regarding education.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Last year, humanitarian aid workers were involved in more than 365 security incidents in the Central African Republic, more than in Syria, Afghanistan, Somalia, or Iraq. VOA's Zach Baruff reports the security challenges make it difficult for aid workers to stay safe and deliver humanitarian support.
Aid workers distribute food at an internally displaced persons camp in Bambari, one of the main flashpoints in the Central African Republic. Fighting between rival armed groups in the area has displaced about 10,000 people in the past month alone. In late December, the Doctors Without Borders compound in Bambari was robbed twice. Bambari's mayor, Mathieu Batapan, says it was unidentified individuals who committed the robberies, not the armed rebel groups that control the town. We deplore all that, he says. I think the cause of all these break-ins is the misery, the poverty. That could perhaps explain it. But it's also the mentality, the education. If you're not educated, one can do this kind of behavior. After the robberies, Doctors Without Borders reduced the size of its team and its activities in Bambari. Suspended aid work can lead to longer-term effects. Emmanuel Lampert is Doctors Without Borders representative in the CAR.
Small children not being immunized and so more vulnerable to those kind of transmittable diseases. All other activities in terms of prevention of diarrheal diseases.
The rate of mortality for children has increased over the past few years because they were not being immunized during the peak of the crisis in 2013 and 2014. With 2.2 million Central Africans, nearly half of the population, in need of humanitarian assistance, aid workers here are constantly operating in tough areas. Across the country, the International NGO Safety Organization recorded 27 injuries in attacks against aid workers last year. That's more than in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Somalia. 5 aid workers were killed. United Nations Humanitarian Affairs official Barbara Batista told VOA that aid organizations rely on the government and MINUSCA, the UN peacekeeping force in the CAR, to protect them and the civilian population.
It's challenging because none of the two have the means to really implement full coverage. Forces of MINUSCA are limited. They cannot cover the whole country.
While the UN has about 12,000 soldiers throughout the country with heavy machine guns and armored vehicles, the government's army and police are under an arms embargo, have little training, and maintain little presence outside of the capital. Lampert says the worsening security situation is a result of fighting over natural resources, making access for humanitarians more difficult. Ocha's Batista says officials coordinate with UN forces to try to get appropriate protection.
Considering that the means and the capacity is limited, at least we can prioritize and say, listen, this we believe is a hotspot that should be taken care of in the coming week or months. And I have to say that so far they are reactive. They are considering what the humanitarians are saying.
What they cannot do, unfortunately, is guarantee aid workers' safety when they enter dangerous areas. Zach Badorf for VOA News in the Central African Republic.
ECOWAS forces have entered the Gambian capital, Banjul, after former President Yahya Jammeh left the country Saturday into exile. Meanwhile, a special advisor to Gambia's newly sworn-in president, Adama Barrow, has alleged that millions of dollars were taken out of state coffers 2 weeks prior to Mr. Jammeh's departure. VOA's James Batty spoke to reporter Sani Marena from Dakar for the latest situation in Gambia.
Former President Yahya Jammeh departed Banjul International Airport on Saturday night to Guinea-Conakry, and now he is reported to have landed at Equatorial Guinea, where he is currently seeking asylum.
There are reports that the former president left with some vehicles belonging to him or belonging to the Gambian people.
Yes, the president left with at least four Zeus luxury cars that are state properties, and the remaining cars that were taken along with the ones he took are currently in Banjul. So he left with lot of looted properties of the state, and at a press conference in Dakar, the special advisor to the president, Adama Barrow, Honorable Mai Fati, said already the state coffers are empty and that at least over 500 million Gambian dollars was taken away by the president within the 2 weeks before his departure yesterday night.
I was reading the declaration by the Economic Community of West African States, the African Union, and the United Nations, under which President Jammeh left. It permitted President Jammeh to leave the country A couple of things struck me that, one, that ECOWAS, the AU, and the UN will work to ensure that ECOWAS and the UN will work with the government of the Gambia to prevent the seizure of assets and properties lawfully belonging to former President Jammeh or his family or those of his cabinet members or government officials. Let me let you react to that first.
Thank you, James. Again, the Office of the President, through his special advisor, Mai Fati, vehemently deny that the document that was purportedly distributed among the media houses, turning away from a declaration that gave Jammeh the green light to leave the country without being arrested. He said this is just a draft document, and when it was sent to President Barrow, he rejected it outright. So he said it does not represent what was discussed during this negotiation. So therefore, the document in circulation does not reflect what was discussed or the reality that led to Jammeh's departure on Saturday night.
And Sydney, you were very fortunate to interview the president, Adama Barrow, in Dakar. So just briefly, what did he have to say?
President Barrow said there will be Truth and Reconciliation Committee, and his government will act based on the recommendations of this Truth and Reconciliation Committee. I did ask him whether the former president will be prosecuted. He said he will not prosecute the former president, but based on the findings of the Truth and Reconciliation, if he is culpable, he will face the full force of the law.
That's VOA's Stringer Sanina Manera speaking with James Berti from Dakar, Senegal. What started off as an idea on Facebook the day after the U.S. presidential election in November grew into a movement that culminated in a Women's March here in Washington, D.C., and sister marches in several other cities across the country and around the world, which attracted millions of people. Now many are wondering what comes next. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
This is what democracy looks like.
The main women's march took place next to the U.S. Capitol building, just a few steps from where President Donald Trump was sworn in the day before. So many people showed up for Saturday's march that hundreds of thousands of people who could not make their way to the streets in front of the stage or view the jumbotron set up nearby spilled onto side streets and began marching spontaneously. The chanting could be heard across the downtown area, but the movement reverberated across the world. Women's marches were also held Saturday in Paris, London, Cape Town, Nairobi, and even Antarctica. Tabitha Awur, a 25-year-old South Sudanese-American from the East Coast state of Virginia, attended the Washington March and stood shoulder to shoulder with other like-minded women. Awur says freedom of speech is the hallmark of a democratic process, and she wanted to add her voice to what she believes is an historic event.
When we work together, we can bring peace. Together mean peace. I feel powerful in a way, and I'm proud to be a lady, a woman, a mother, and a South Sudanese and American.
Many women like Awur worry that the new Trump administration could undo years of hard work of securing equal rights for women and progress on civil rights. Organizers of the Women's March released a set of action plans they want all those who gathered in Washington and other American cities to support over the next few months. They want supporters to contact their U.S. senators by writing postcards, expressing their support for women's reproductive rights, then sharing pictures of the movement through social media. They also want the marchers to create business cards that could help supporters stay in touch with politicians and other supporters. On their website, organizers say they intend to release future action plans. Marcher Kadis Tesfaye, an Ethiopian-American who lives in nearby Virginia, says she plans to keep the momentum going. Tesfaye says she marched to remind the world, and especially her native Ethiopia, that women have the same abilities as men and should have the same rights as men.
You know, we have to support the people. We know about the man right, and we know about our right too. So we have to work hard. And as you know, Africa is very harder country for women because the women had to do a lot of things for the kids, for the countries. It's a lot of things. It's not equal to America for the women. It's very hard and back home. But even if we are very strong, we have to learn our kids how they will be strong for the next generation.
Tesfai says state and local law should reflect the equality of all people. After what she describes as the successful Women's March on Washington, she says hard work of mobilizing and informing voters in her community is just beginning. Tesfai plans to return to her native Ethiopian diaspora community and tell them how to contact their elected officials and how to keep informed about developments made on Capitol Hill and at the White House. 16-year-old Juan Collado, who traveled to D.C. from Rochester, New York, led this chant on Saturday, both in English but also in his native Spanish. He says he came to Washington to march on behalf of a special woman in his life.
And I believe that my mom, like all the mothers and all the women, the girls can be women, can be a kid, whoever this girl, have the same rights as a boy.
Collado says he plans to energize his community in New York to continue to press for women's rights, including equal pay for equal work.
After this march, I gotta keep doing this because for me, the women are the most important thing in this world.
U.S. media reports say far more than 1 million people gathered in cities across the country to take part in the Women's March. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Kelele by Hardlife Avenue Stars. We have been listening to Hardlife Avenue Stars with the song Kelele. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.